It's great to be here this morning. Really good to be with you. And hopefully, if all things go to plan, this will be the last time that I'll be leading over screen and in person, hopefully, next time. So we're nearly, it feels like to me and to Alistair that we're getting there slowly. We're nearly there. But we're really looking forward to the point when we're physically with you in the village. But it's been great, hasn't it, to have this opportunity over Zoom to stay connected for the last 6 months. And we thank God for the opportunities that we've had to do that, even though I'm right down here in Chichester. It's been really good to be part of your services. And great to be joining now in for our third slot of the series that we've been looking at, which is A People on the Move from Exodus, looking at this whole idea of this journey that God's people were on as they made a transition from slavery into freedom. And it's great to be looking at this today because it's very much, isn't it, where we are as a church and also as a community, as so many changes are happening for us over the next few months. So David, could you just pop the PowerPoint for us? We're going to use this to help us structure this next session. And as I've done in previous sessions, we're going to do this in a slightly different way, a little bit more creatively. The message today is going to be in four slots, and we're going to look at the passage, sections of the passage as we go along. And I'm very thankful that several people have offered to do the reading as we do that, and as we progress through this slightly longer passage today. So we'll move on to the next slide, if that's okay, David. So this is just a bit of a recap as we jump back into this series from the last few sessions. If you remember the very first session, we spent a bit of time thinking about the fact that God notices. God noticed his people, and he was aware of their suffering. He heard their cry, and he turned his attention to them in a very practical way. And that was a really helpful starting point as we started to think about this series of God's people on the move, because at that, right at the beginning there, God reminded his people that he was with them, that they didn't travel alone, and that he had a plan for them. And that's really helpful for us, isn't it, at this stage, to be reminded that God is with us and that he has a plan for us. And then Chris continued with the journey with us. And the last session, he looked at God protects. And we jumped into the story at the very moment when God's people left Egypt. That huge moment of change for them as a whole nation. And Chris really helpfully reminded us that God protected them, he saved them, and it was very much an act of grace. An act of grace for those who believed and trusted in him. And wasn't it good to be reminded that it was a foretaste of Jesus coming and his grace for us, and that he saves us and he protects us. This grace is perfect and it's wonderful. It's fully expressed in Jesus. And again, it was just really helpful to be reminded that as we navigate through some of the pressures of life, as we enter into spiritual battle, that God is there and he protects us. And today we're looking at this third area of how God responded to his people. We're going to be thinking about how God delivered them. We're going to be looking at Exodus 14, 1 to 31. So if anyone has their Bible, we're going to be using this whole chapter to think about this idea of how God delivered his people. The journey had just begun. It was right at the start of this very long journey for God's people. And already we discover in this passage that it wasn't very straightforward. In fact, the path wasn't straight at all. It almost seems as if at the beginning, God's people were going round in circles. So I'm going to pass to Sean now, and he's going to read us the first part of the passage.
Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and camp in front of Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol on the Red Sea, near Baal Zephon. The king will think that the Israelites are wandering about in the country and are closed in by the desert. I will make him stubborn, and he will pursue you, and my victory over the king and his army will bring me honor. Then the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. The Israelites did as they were told.
Sometimes God seems to take us the long way round, doesn't he? And David might just pop the slide up for us. And what I've done through today is I'm just used some road signs just to help us as memory points as we think about the passage. Sometimes God seems to take us the long way round. Because discerning where God is leading us can sometimes feel confusing and unclear. I don't know if that's ever been your experience. It's certainly been mine. In the current church that I'm in Chichester, I've been on the diaconate there now for 7 years, and we've had this experience lots of times. I'm sure you have as a church as well. And we particularly seem to face this challenge of God taking us the long way round when we've been appointing new staff members. And it's something that we've talked about and reflected on as a leadership team. It's almost as if God has taken us on a journey that we've not quite expected. It hasn't been the straight, obvious journey that we've expected. It's been longer. It seems at some points that we've gone round in circles. But when we look back, it's amazing to see how much we've learnt and how much we've had to depend on God. Hindsight is a good thing, isn't it? And it's good to be reminded that it's God's timing that is perfect and not ours. Because sometimes the journey is as important as the actual end point. So the journey is as important as the end point. I wonder if that's helpful for a few people today amongst us as we think about this journey that the Israelites had started. Maybe it feels a bit like for you at the moment that you're going round in circles. Maybe you're wondering why God's taking you a certain way, why he can't just take you straight to the point that you feel you need to be going to. And I wonder if that's what it felt like for the Israelites. They'd taken this huge decision, hadn't they, to leave Egypt, and now they were exposed. They're in the desert. They're exposed to the power and the spite of the Egyptians, those that had oppressed them, that were powerful. And they were also exposed to the desert, to life in a desert. They'd left slavery, but at least in Egypt, they'd had food and there was shelter and there was stability. And as we start to read these verses at the beginning of this passage, you can almost sense the growing panic that's there in God's people. And as people looked in on them, it tells us in the passage that the section we've just read, it seems like they were confused and they were hemmed in. So it's not a great start, is it, for this epic journey, this national exodus of a people. I wonder if there was starting to be a few complaints, some people that were starting to doubt. I wonder how Moses felt at the beginning of this journey. Was he wondering whether he'd made the right decision? The stakes seem really high, don't they, at this point in their story? In human terms, there's a really high risk of failure. So we're going to carry on now with the passage and follow through the story. And Marion's going to read us this next section.
When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and all of his officials changed their minds about them and said, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services." So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of his best chariots along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with the officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and the chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi-Haroth, opposite Baal-Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to the Egypt to see to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring to you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still."
Thanks, Mariam. So this next bit of the story, it seems to be getting worse, doesn't it? Not only had they wandered around in circles or seemed to, they were now facing the enemy in the eye. And understandably, they were full of panic, ready to throw in this newly acquired freedom that God had given them, ready to run, ready to turn back. I don't know about you, but as I read this bit of the passage, I've got a lot of sympathy for God's people at this stage. It's so very human, isn't it? They're so very much like you and me. We're called to be a people of faith, to walk by faith and not by sight. But when things are heavily stacked against us, when we feel threatened, when we feel vulnerable, when everything that's safe and familiar is stripped away, it can be really hard, can't it, to not be afraid. It's just so tempting, isn't it, to want to give up, to throw in the towel and to walk away. And Chris talked a bit about this, didn't he, in the last session. He reminded us that being a believer doesn't mean that we're protected from the pressures and knocks of life. And that's the same for us as a Christian community. It doesn't protect us from some of the pressures and rigors of spiritual warfare that we have to face as God's people. There's going to be times, and there will be times ahead, when we are under attack. And that's no more so than when we actually step out in faith, just like God's people, when we make ourselves vulnerable, when we expose ourselves to risk and change. It's a time when we can be particularly vulnerable. The thing is that the life of discipleship is not necessarily safe. You might want to pop the next slide up for me there, David. Following Jesus is not an easy option. It can sometimes place us under challenge. It's not something that is necessarily going to be comfortable, and we're not called as disciples to be passive. And change itself is very unsettling, because by its nature, change disrupts. It changes things, doesn't it? It takes us out of our comfort zones and it stretches us. But it's the only way you can change. There's got to be some level of disruption to take you to the new place, on that journey. At the beginning of the year, I followed a really helpful prayer series, and I know some of you did as well. I know that Jill referred to this in some of the prayer slots that we get, prompts that we get every day. I just wanted to share with you some of this from that series. It was from LICC, and it was called Transitions. And David, would you like to pop the slide up for me? So some of you will know, recognise these, some might be new. But basically, it was a prayer series that took you through these four stages of transition. And I found them really helpful, particularly for myself at the moment that's going through lots of change. But I wondered if some of you might find this helpful and whether it might be helpful for us as a church just to think about these sort of four stages. And you can see some of these happening for God's people as they begin this journey. This exodus. So there's discerning the signals of change, seeing that there's things that need to change and recognizing those. And I know as a church, you've been on that journey for a year or two now, just recognizing that there's things that you feel that God wants you to change as a community. Then there's a sense of beginning to let go of ending well, of letting go of the old. Sometimes that can be quite hard. I know for me at the moment, beginning to let go and end well in my NHS job It's quite an emotional thing, actually. Some colleagues I've been working with for now for 16 years, and it will be quite sad to say goodbye to them. And then this next stage, feeling disorientated. When I saw this, I found this really helpful, actually. But as you change, there is a stage that you go through when you feel unsettled and life feels a bit disorientated. And I think we can see that with God's people in this passage. And it's good to just acknowledge that that's a normal feeling that you have as you change. And then you get to the final point, this idea of being orientated or settled or aware and settled into your new situation. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to ask David to just take us back into some small breakout groups. And I'd like you to just think about these four stages of change. Maybe discuss and see where you are at personally if you want to, or you might want to talk about it from a church point of view. Where do you think we are at these stages as a church, and why? Why do you think that? And then if you have some time, we're going to have 5 minutes to do this, then do pray for one another and pray for us as a church community at this point as we make transition. Right. I hope you found that helpful. Our group started to get into a really interesting conversation, actually, about change and disorientation and what the impact of COVID has had on that. So I hope you found that helpful as well, as we just start to think about what it means today around transitioning and change and for God's people, because they would have felt a lot of the things that we were feeling now, some of the uncertainty, the risk and not knowing what the future looked like. That was all part of their experience as they moved, as they made this exodus out of Egypt. I think for us, it's helpful to look at this story, isn't it? It's a really timely, helpful story to be reminded that some of the things that we face now, God's people have had to deal with and navigate through for thousands of years. And we join in with that story as part of our own journey as a church. But it's not surprising that at this stage, the Israelites felt really disorientated. And they were quite frightened, I guess, many of them at this stage in their journey. And there's some really helpful things to notice in this story. First of all, in the background of all of this, God is working out his purposes. And he does this in hidden ways and also visible ways. What do I mean by hidden? Well, if you look back a little bit in the story to Exodus 13, you'll discover that God had already decided not to take the people on the shortest direct route, which is quite fascinating. And there was a reason for that. He realised that if they took that route, it would be too difficult for them and they might give up. So that's really interesting, isn't it, to know the background, the backstory to this story, that God knew his people really well. And he knew what they could endure, and he kept them safe during this process. The other really interesting thing to notice as well, and a lot of the commentators notice this as well, that the point where it looks like God's people are going around in circles, actually God's instructions are very precise, and there's those lovely Hebrew place names that are quite difficult to pronounce, but they give you a kind of triangulation on the map of a very precise place that God sent his people round. And in fact, some of the commentators try and work out, looking at the map of the area that they travelled through, to try and work out where the people were actually at that time, but are using the place names, which is quite interesting. So although from the outside, it looked like they were going round in circles and they were confused, actually, God had this in hand and it was very precise and he knew what he was doing. So that's really helpful for us to remember that that God was working out his purposes in a hidden way at this point for his people. But he was also doing that very visibly, and his physical presence was with them. And the story tells us about this amazing pillar of cloud in the day and pillar of fire at night. And that's really visible, isn't it? Everyone can see that. It's really clear that God is there And as we read further into the story today, we're going to find out that God's visibility actually shields and protects his people further into the story. So as you start to think about this, it really begins to shift things, doesn't it, for God's people? It's kind of like a bit of a, oh, okay moment, because although the people were panicking, this isn't just about a human experience or a human journey. This isn't about their ability to make the right decisions or to protect themselves or to plan or to be in control, because God is present in that situation. And it begins to shift the perspective of this story. It shifts it in a big way, because this is not their battle. The battle belongs to the Lord. And then Moses gives these remarkable words. I don't know if any of you noticed these, but they really jumped out for me. He says, "The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." So remarkably, this is a command not to move at this point in the story. The Hebrew word for still, it means quiet, it means silent, it means speechless, and it means closing your ears from all the distractions around. So this is a really powerful verse for God's people. And as I read it this week, as I was planning, it actually made me stop in my tracks. My life is just full of change at the moment. It's full of lists and planning and organising. There seems to be so much to do and there's no time. It feels like time is against me. But this verse made me stop. It made me stop and be still and to trust in my God who fights for me. That's a really powerful thing for us, isn't it, to hold on to. I'm not sure what faces you this week, in the week ahead. We've all got our own unique pressures, haven't we, and concerns and battles. And some of you might feel that you feel overwhelmed at the moment. As we press forward as a church, there's going to be pressures and concerns and things that might feel like they're overwhelming us. Yet in the midst of all this, God calls us to be still, to stop listening to all the distractions around us and to be ready before him. He calls us into a sense of calm within the storm. He calls us to fix our eyes on Jesus. And this part of the story reminded me of the one of the gospel stories of Peter. And do you remember this, when he steps out of the boat in Matthew 14? And it's when he becomes distracted by the waves and the wind around him that he starts to sink. But when he looks at Jesus, it's okay. It's the calm. And it's a trust. It's like a trust exercise. God's people at this point were under huge pressure. And yet what does God tell them to do? He tells them to be still, to quieten themselves in the middle of the crisis, ready to listen to what he has for them. And we're going to enter back into the story now and find out what that's all about. And I'm going to pass across to Linda. Thank you, Linda.
Verse 15:31. The Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out for help? Tell the people to move forward. Lift up your stick and hold it out over the sea. The water will divide and the Israelites will be able to walk through the sea on dry ground. I will make the Egyptians so stubborn that they will go in after them, and I will gain honour by my victory over the king, his army, his chariots and his drivers. When I defeat them, the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." The angel of God, who had been in front of the army of Israel, moved and went to the rear. The pillar of cloud moved until it was between the Egyptians and the Israelites. The cloud made it dark for the Egyptians, but gave light to the people of Israel, and so the armies could not come near each other all night. Moses held out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind. It blew all night and turned the sea into dry land. the water was divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with walls of water on both sides. The Egyptians pursued them and went after them into the sea with all their horses, chariots, and drivers. Just before dawn, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw them into a panic. He made the wheels of their chariots get stuck so that they moved with great difficulty. The Egyptians said, "The Lord is fighting for the Israelites against us. Let's get out of here." The Lord said to Moses, "Hold out your hand over the sea, and the water will come back over the Egyptians and their chariots and their drivers." So Moses held out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak, the water returned to its normal level. The Egyptians tried to escape from the water, but the Lord threw them into the sea. The water returned and covered their chariots, the drivers, and all the Egyptian army that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them was left. But the Israelites walked through the sea on dry ground with walls of water on both sides. On the day, the Lord saved the people of Israel from the Egyptians, and the Israelites saw them lying dead on the seashore. When the Israelites saw the great power with which the Lord had defeated the Egyptians, they stood in awe of the Lord, and they had faith in the Lord and in his servant, Moses.
Thank you, Linda. That's helpful just to hear that story, isn't it? It's so familiar to us, and yet really good to hear that read again as part of this journey that God's people are on, because this is an amazing story. This is a story of God delivering his people in an incredible, miraculous way. God acts and God delivers in a mighty, mighty way. God's people at this point had to totally look to him. There was nothing they could do for themselves. They had the enemy in front of them and the sea behind them, and they were thrown into full dependency on God. They got to the end of themselves, and literally they needed God and no one else. No one else could resolve this problem for them. They needed to be people who could walk by faith and not by sight, as we sung at the beginning of the service. This is an amazing point for God's people. They're literally going to walk into the sea. They're going to walk through walls of water. Water at any minute that could overwhelm them. But God saves them. This desert place, this place of confusion and walking round in circles, this place of fear had become a place where they discovered new things about themselves and about God. And I just want to make a few sort of observations, really, about this part in the story that might be helpful for us. The first one is from verse 71. It's really short and it's to the point, isn't it? It says the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and their left. But let's not underestimate the level of trust that they needed to do this. The trust that Moses needed as he led his people through the water. The trust that each family had to have in God as they walked through these walls of water with those that they loved, with their children, with their spouses, with their parents. Can you imagine stepping through these walls of water? I'm sure there was a real mixture of relief. There was a way out of this situation, but it required huge faith. And this is what faith is, isn't it? It's trust and action together. Faith is trust and action together. And the Israelites needed to do that to go on to the next stage of the journey. So that was my first observation. The second one that I wanted to share with you is a more difficult one, isn't it? We can't ignore the implications that this story had for the Egyptians. But they'd been given so many opportunities, hadn't they, to respond to God, to do the right thing, to do the just thing. but they'd made the decision not to follow God's ways, not to follow him. Pharaoh's heart had become hard-hearted. And there's quite an interesting theological discussion to have around what that might be, which is probably for another day. But they continued to stand against God, despite all the warnings that they'd had and the opportunities that they'd had to do the right thing before God. Even when an amazing miracle was happening before them, they still chose to follow their own powerful agenda, believing themselves to be indestructible, despite everything that God had shown them. So it's right to feel compassion for them, for this situation, because we worship a God who is compassionate, who is slow to anger, and who is abounding in love. And as you read Exodus, you can see how God tries to do that for the Egyptian nation. Yet God is also a God of justice and fairness. Because this miraculous action that happens, it's not just about the release of slaves, but it's also about the destruction of all the principalities of darkness and death that twist the world, that bring slavery, that bring suffering. God breaks the power of Pharaoh, who is totally resistant to him right to the end. And he does it once and for all. And like so much of the Old Testament, it speaks, doesn't it, into what is to come in Jesus. It's an echo of what is going to happen in the future. This story sets the scene for Jesus as he comes in and he breaks the power of evil, bringing us freedom, free from slavery, the slavery of sin that we had before. Breaking through all that holds us back and the darkness that holds us back. This story speaks into God's redemption of his whole creation. Jesus, when he died on the cross, he broke the power of death and evil, and he came to bring us freedom. This is what Paul, the Apostle Paul, says. He says, "It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery." This story speaks into all those things for us. It reminds us of all that Jesus was to do in the future for us. This is about God's complete finishing of the past for God's people, for the Israelites. He delivers them fully. The old way is broken and destroyed. God's people can step into freedom. They don't have to look back anymore and be frightened. The old life had gone and the new had begun. This was complete. This was final for all that had happened for them in the past. So that was my second thought, just to think that through, really, and what that might mean for us. And then there's a third dimension to this part of the story. It reminds us of the power of Yahweh, of God. Because at this point in history, God becomes a God who is the God of all the world and becomes known for his power and might. Not just the God of a Hebrew group of slaves, but a God who is greater than any earthly king. Because Pharaoh represented all the powers and strengths of human might at that point in history. And God was able to defeat him and demonstrate his power. And it's also a moment of huge significance for the Israelite people. It's all about the relationship with God and being able to move forward. It was really intense, this experience for them, of God delivering them from the hands of Pharaoh into freedom. And it was something that God would do for them time and time again, working out his plan through his people. God acts to save, and they needed to respond. Moses needed to lead. The people needed to be still, to turn their full attention to God. They needed to follow his instructions, and then they needed to walk through the wall of water. God's people needed to trust God. This is about how God works through us, his people, to bring about his will and his plan. So as we bring this part of the service to a close now, there's just three things that might be helpful for us to think about. The first thing is that sometimes God takes us the long way round. And some of you listening today, that will be really helpful just to think through. God doesn't always take us the direct, obvious route that we want or anticipate. So if that's for you today, I just want you to maybe think, I want to challenge you to just look back over the route that you've taken and look for where God is working out his purposes, both hidden and visible, as he takes you forward. The second thing that might be helpful is to remember that when life is overwhelming, when we feel that we want to give up, at that point, we need to stop and we need to be still before God. We need to stop doing the talking, stop listening to the distractions, and turn our full attention to God. So if that's for you this week, I want to challenge you to find that stillness and ask you to think about how you might be able to do that, to be able to stop and be still before God and come into his presence and focus on him. And then finally, this final challenge for us as a church, and this whole series, I think, is really challenging for us. We've spent time listening. We've spent time talking about big steps of faith into the unknown. And these months ahead are going to be months of transition for me and for you. Are we ready to step forward into what God has planned for us, even if it feels risky? And how can we help each other to trust in God as we continue to be a people of God on the move? So three actions maybe from this: to be still, to have a look at where God has taken us the long way round, and then to think about how we can help each other to trust and support each other as we move forward.